taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
The beatings will continue until morale improves. Welcome, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study, and that is the theme of today's episode. This story that they will continue to beat people into submission until they get what they want. We're going to start today with one that's been going on for years, and that is the case of Jack Phillips out of Colorado. Now, for those of you who may not be familiar with the case, Jack Phillips owns a cake shop. He makes custom cakes. He makes cakes he sells over the counter, and he is a Christian. So there are certain cakes that he will not make. He will not make custom cakes that celebrate Halloween, that denigrate people, that are racist, or that support same-sex marriage or transgender activities. So way back in 2012, I believe, he was requested, a gay couple came in, asked him to make a custom wedding cake for their same-sex marriage, for their homosexual marriage. He declined. He says, no, I can't do that. I will sell you any product I have in the store. I will make custom cakes for other things, but I will not do one for a homosexual marriage. This, of course, was not met with the, okay, I disagree with you, so I'll take my business somewhere else. This came with the political beating. This couple went to their local human, the city's human rights commission, the state's human rights commission, said, how dare this person deny me the right of doing business with him? How dare he not be forced? He must be forced to do what we want him to do. This case actually made it all the way to the Supreme Court. In 2018, the court opined that, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission truly violated, they treated Jack Phillips and his religious beliefs with animus. Now, I remember reviewing this case. They did not say that he had the right to refuse. They merely said, listen, Colorado Civil Rights Commission, we looked at what you were saying. We looked at your documentation. It was truly abhorrent. You were truly discriminating against his religion. You were treating him poorly. So stop it. And literally that same day that SCOTUS agreed to take the case, a transgender activist woman came in and asked Phillips to order a gender transition cake. Wait a second. The case was just for the homosexual cake was just brought to the court, and now you're coming here. And this has been going on. This has been going on. He has been dealing with this since way back, I believe, in 2012 when this all started. And here it is, 2021, and he is still dealing with them because the last thing these people want him to do is to have a choice. And in fact, it's been given a name. It's been given the name the Rainbow Mafia. And I find this interesting because, again, I've been around a little while, and I remember the Al Sharptons and the Jesse Jacksons using extortion for what at the time was called the Rainbow Coalition, which was not about homosexuality. It was about race. And I remember Jesse Jackson shaking down companies saying, hey, we'll sue you, but if you donate to our cause, we won't. And I remember Al Sharpton. I lived in New York State when he brought the false allegations of a race-based attack on a woman. I remember all that, yet that tactic is still used over and over and over again. And it's this idea that if, we will just keep beating and pounding you into submission until you agree with us. Now, there are lots of interest, a lot of bakers. There's also a lot of photographers. In fact, the Alliance Defending Freedom is representing a Bob Updegrove in a case that involves a Virginia law that says he has to, he must, he is forced, according to this law, to create art, photography, celebrating same-sex weddings. Now, let's forget the fact that, or let's not forget the fact, let's remember the fact that the Constitution of the United States says you have the right to be secure, that you have the, you cannot be deprived of your property without due process of law. And a business is your property. That means you cannot be deprived of control of your property without due process of law. This is the intentional imposition of a worldview on other people, and it's being done by government. Now, I understand the rationale. We have a history of truly abhorrent worldviews being lived out. But the one thing we should have learned through all of this time is that when you try to legislate a worldview, it rarely works out well. It usually ends up backfiring right in your face. But it's another example of what has become a quite common occurrence, in that we will use political pressure to get our way, to force other people into compliance. The exact opposite of liberty. The idea that, hey, I may vehemently disagree with you, but I will defend to the death your right to say it, is gone. Now, if you disagree with me, I will find a way to punish you. And again, it's not simply in businesses. A professor, Richard Paxton, at Pacific University in Portland, Oregon, had a little run-in. Now, for 15 years, he's been teaching at that school, and he teaches a class called Foundations of Human Development and Psychology. And he's covering how our brains, our cognitive powers develop, and how we continue to perceive and the world around us. And in this, he uses a story to illustrate how this works. And he's used this story for years. He recounts how he and his colleagues were once in New Orleans for a conference. They thought they saw a woman standing outside a bar, only to learn later that it was actually a female impersonator. Now, he tells this to teach the class how initial impressions can be misleading. And it usually gets, it's a laugh. It's how, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. However, one whiny little snot-nosed student, I have no respect for this student, claimed that that the professor, Paxton, was racist, sexist, and homophobic, and threatened a Title IX investigation. I will get the government to come in and investigate the school for a teacher using an anecdote that says, don't judge people on first impressions. Don't recognize that your first impression of someone may be wrong, which isn't that the point of the transgender culture? Your first impressions may not be right. Now, this student demanded, this whiny little student, I won't even name her, demanded that the professor be, that he resign, or she would file a Title IX investigation. Give me what I want, or I'll sick the feds on you. Well, guess what? Over, you know, the professor got a lawyer and requested a meeting. The student refused. And this is now more than 6 months later. This professor has not been allowed on campus. The only communications he's received is a notice of allegations of sexual misconduct under Title IX. Now, again, I personally see no problem with an object lesson, a simple object lesson that says, don't judge people by your first impression. It may be wrong. But because apparently this student somehow was offended that he thought a female impersonator was a woman, now this man's life is being ruined with a threat of an illegal government investigation, because again, Nothing in the Constitution gives the federal government authority over education or over sexual crime, sexual misconduct. It doesn't. But again, we have people using the bludgeon of these, I'll be generous and say, these laws created with good intentions. These really, really bad laws that were made in many cases with good intentions. And as we see, they're being used truly abhorrently. But it's not simply the threats of federal lawsuits, the threats of state lawsuits. Sometimes it's simply the actions of government. This is going to be an interesting twist. See, if you remember last year, we had Black Lives Matter and Antifa protests over the summer. Violent protests, riots, looting, burning, even assaults and death. And what's interesting is, in response to this, many cities said, oh, okay, no, please leave them alone. They're just, quote unquote, mostly peaceful protesters. If you've not seen the video of a CNN, quote unquote, reporter standing in front of a burning building saying the protests were mostly peaceful. Well, what happens when governments fail to do their job to protect the rights of their citizens? Surprise, surprise, violent crimes have surged after the protests. After the government said, no, we need to, stand back. Oh, no. Then it was defund the police. And now we find the same cities that said, we'll defund the police. We'll let these rioters run free. We won't protect the rights of our citizens. We will protect the bad actions of criminals, but not the rights of our citizens. Surprise, surprise. Violent crime is up. And it's up significantly. So what we have are bullies in the form of BLM and Antifa. That's what they are. They're bullies. And anybody who's seen a teen special about bullies knows that the best way to deal with a bully is to confront them. But no. We have to submit to the bullies. We have cities that say we're going to submit to the bullies. And surprise, surprise, more bullies show up. We're going to beat you into agreeing with us as a protection racket. Have you not seen the stores with the signs that they've put up in the windows saying that are pro BLM in the hopes that they don't get looted and burned? That's being ruled by intimidation. That is not the rule of law. It's the rule of the jungle. And this is being allowed to continue in what's supposed to be the land of the free. Well, how free are you if the Declaration of Independence is right and governments are instituted among men to protect our rights? What good is a government that won't protect your rights? That leaves you to the kind mercies of thugs and looters and arsonists. Yet, I wonder, in the last election, how many of the leaders of those cities lost their job because they refused to do their job? How many? I don't know. It's even gotten so far, there was a gentleman in Minnesota, who was just trying to get home, and he tries to turn onto his street, and was blocked by motorcyclists and protesters. And he's pointing out, says, "I live right there. I just want to go right there where my house is." And a scuffle ensued as the bikers that were blocking the street shoved the man, and he shoved back, and of course, jolly on spot. Officers intervened. Here you go. You have people illegally blocking access to a public street, violating the rights of the owners of property on that street. This man is just trying to get home. They are violating his rights. The bikers apparently pushed first, and guess who gets arrested? You got it. The poor homeowner that's just trying to get home through a protest that's violating his rights. The city, in the form of the police, say you're not allowed to disagree with them. You're not allowed to actually go to your home. You're not even allowed to defend yourself against a quote-unquote protest that is blocking a public right-of-way, that's violating the law. See, these are all examples of being beaten into submission, of being ruled by intimidation. Now, imagine you are a homeowner in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and you see a riot that is in your way. You want to get home. You can't get home. Maybe you have to get home, but you're intimidated now because even if you exercise your right, even if you follow the law, the police may come after you because you got because the criminals now rule. The criminals are ruling the streets in Minneapolis. Yet how many of the city leaders, how many on the city council lost their job because they refused to make sure the police who work for the city enforce the law and protect the rights of the citizens? We love to put our hand over our hearts and say that we're the land of the free. How is this freedom? We say we're the home of the brave. Well, we're the brave people standing up to the police and their employer saying, no, 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 no. You work for the people, not for the rioters. Your job is to protect the rights of the citizens of this city, not the people breaking the law. And if you cannot or will not do that, you no longer are qualified for that office. No. Most people just sit back and say, well, what are you going to do? It's the police. The police work for you. The police are there to protect the citizens, the lawful residents, not the people who are breaking the law. This is the type of stuff that, it really pisses me off. It's one of the reasons why I met with my sheriff and I asked him a very simple question. I said, I told him, this is what I want. This is what I want from you. When I pick up the phone and dial 911 and one of your deputies shows up, I want them to understand that their primary responsibility, first and foremost, before anything else, is to protect the rights of the people involved. They're to protect my rights, they're to protect the rights of others, but, you're coming to my house, that's what I want. I want you to protect my rights. You should be protecting everybody's rights, but I want you protecting my rights. So if someone is blocking access to my property, my right is to enter my property. I'm on a public thoroughfare. I'm on a public right-of-way. I have the right as a free citizen to travel that. If they are preventing that, they are the ones breaking the law. They are the ones violating my rights. I want them moved. If they refuse to move, I want them arrested. If someone comes to my door and is trespassing and I call 911, I don't want the sheriff saying, well, they have a right to protest. Not on my property, they don't. And if you will not protect my rights, I will do what I can to get you removed. Now, thankfully, my sheriff says, absolutely, you know, they're there to protect your rights. That's the training. They're there I train them to stop and look and judge what's going on, understanding that the people have rights, that we're there to protect and defend the rights of the people involved. Absolutely. My response to him was excellent. So here's what I'll do. If you need assistance. I said, I'll volunteer to help. If you need, if your people need training in Constitution, fine. If you need a chaplain or some other counsel, I will do that. If all you need is when push comes to shove, when something happens, and you just need someone to stand with you at a press conference and explain the issues, I will do that. See, if you come and protect my rights, I will support you. If you don't protect my rights, I will fight against you. We need to be brave enough to stand up to the intimidation. We need to be like Jack Phillips, who's willing to spend 8-10 years of his life defending his right to not be forced, coerced into speech. We need to be born like him. We need to be more like the Virginia photographer, Bob Updegrove, saying, no, I will take the time, I will spend the money to protect my right to express myself how I wish. We need to stand with that Pacific University professor. If you are an alum of Pacific University, if in any way, shape, or form you send money to Pacific, why? Why are you funding bullies? If you live in one of these cities that refuses to enforce the law, that refuses to protect the rights of its citizens, why do you allow your employees in the city government to continue with their job? Is it because we are not brave? Could it be that the American people have become so cowardly, so fearful of their government, that they won't do the right thing? Or could it be maybe that it's just the number of people that will stand is small? Well, that's okay. We don't need large quantities of people. If anything, we should see small vocal minorities can make a huge change. It means standing up for what is right, even when it's inconvenient, even when it's costly, even when it's painful. For example, Representative Brian Mast. See, he sent a letter to the House Ethics Committees because he's been fined $500 for appearing in the House chambers without a mask. And Speaker Pelosi fined him. Now, I've seen interesting stories, and they talk about the new CDC guidelines and all that. And how about the fact that just because you're a member of the House doesn't mean you're not a citizen anymore? Now, he, in his letter, apparently says he's appealing the fine because he was in compliance with CDC guidance. But he then goes and says that the mask mandate was unlawful. Now, it's one of those things where I kind of agree and I kind of disagree. He goes on to say that the CDC's told us if you're vaccinated, you don't need to go around wearing a mask. And everybody apparently in Congress has been vaccinated. But there are two things that I saw. So you have Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, enforcing a mask mandate for show, not for science. She doesn't wear a mask when she's out and about. There's video evidence of her greeting dozens of fellow Democrats at the White House without a mask. She wasn't worried there. But you see, she's a bully. And she wants everybody wearing a mask because it's the show of it. She wants the people wearing the mask. She doesn't have to wear a mask except for show, kind of like Fauci was saying. It's a show. And one man stood up and said, no. And if you're going to fine me for it, well, no. I'm not going to cower. I'm going to be the home of the brave, and I'm going to stand up. Now, is a $500 fine going to destroy Mr. Mast? I don't know. I don't care. The question is, are the American people going to stand up and do the right thing? Or are we going to let the people's house, the House of Representatives, elected by the people to represent the people, to exercise the people's power in their name, are we going to let that house be run by a bully? I don't know. Not me. I won't vote for anybody that would support that. And yes, I'm only one voice out of 330 million. But if I'm alone, there's no hope for this country. But if you're listening to this program, then maybe I'm not alone. And maybe it's time we, regardless of the party, regardless of how it, of whether or not we think our representative will comply or not, it's about time we get some backbone, screw our bravery, you know, to our spines and say, no, you will not turn our house into a den. Well, it's already a den of thieves. But we're going to say no more. No more. If you want to live in a totalitarian regime, head to North Korea, head to China, but not here in America, where we the people reign. We the people are the source of all power. And we the people won't stand for our elected employees to exercise their power as bullies. And if we won't do it, no one else will. So before we head out to break, you know, I've been talking about I'm heading out on the road this summer. I got a big road trip going. In fact, I just got an invitation. I don't know if I can make it, but I'm an invitation to go to Idaho. And my schedule doesn't, not sure I'm going to make it, but I'm going to try real hard. But one of the biggest problems I have when I'm on the road is getting to sleep at night. You know, you're staying in a hotel in a strange room. I have a hard time getting to sleep. So I'm really looking forward. I just got from Healthy Cell this REM sleep shot. My wife has been using it. She says it works really, really well. So I'm looking forward to trying it when I hit the road. So if you're like me, whether you're on the road, you know, they're convenient. They're little shooter packs. They're easy to pack. You know, if you're like me, if you ever have trouble sleeping, well, head to healthycell.com/outloud. You'll get 20% off your first order. Try the REM sleep. Whether it's a regular problem or just an occasional problem, give it a try. And if it works as well for you and for me as it does for my wife, I'm planning to sleep like a baby while I'm on the road. So again, that's healthycell.com/outloud. Try that for 20% off your first order. And join me back here in a few minutes right after this break.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study, and I want to make a point. So I have no problem with someone who decides they don't want to do business or they don't want to support a person, an organization that they disagree with. I have zero problem with, for example, that Pacific University student saying, I don't want to take this class because I don't like the professor. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with the customers, either for the cake baker or the photographer, saying, I won't do any business here. I will take it somewhere else. The problem I have is when we use public pressure, when we use government to bully other people into our point of view. That is where I have the problem. I have no problem with BLM having demonstrations. As long as they're peacefully assembling, as long as they're not infringing on the rights of others, BLM and Antifa, they can say what they want, they can gather however they want, as long as they're not infringing on the rights of others. But the idea that they are now intimidating the police to not doing their job, that's where I have a problem. I have a problem with a government leader mandating a mask mandate because they have no legal authority to do so. But again, there's so many places where this tactic has just, it's become part of our society. It's become part of our culture. For example, there's a report that President Biden has got the Pentagon to launch a pilot program to basically snoop on the social media of members of the armed forces. Why? Well, he wants them to look for what he calls extremist material. Well, that sounds good, right? We don't want extremists. I mean, if we're not talking about people who are planning on bombing. We've seen military people in the military that have committed crimes, that have committed shootings. But who defines what is extremist? The military is already being trained to say that anybody that disagrees with the government is an anti-government extremist. That if you actually uphold the Constitution, you're an anti-government extremist. And what about that little thing called the Fourth Amendment? Don't the members of the armed forces have a right to not be subject to an unreasonable search? Oh, but Paul, the Supreme Court said they could do it because it's held by a third party. Yeah, well, the Supreme Court is wrong. The Supreme Court can't understand basic English, and I've proven it over and over again. Unreasonable search doesn't say unreasonable search unless it's held by a third party. That's mumbo jumbo that the court made up to allow government actors to snoop. So now we're going to bully people in the military. We're going to shut them up. We don't want them speaking. What if they disagree with some policy? I'm not talking about simply holding the commander-in-chief in contempt. That's actually a federal crime. That's an interesting question. But what if they disagree with how something's being done? Or what if they simply go out and say, you know what, I'm reading and studying the Constitution, and there are things the federal government doesn't have power to do? Or will they suddenly be labeled by, if not the current administration, some bureaucrat somewhere as an extremist, meaning they're targeted? This is closing in on thought police. Where if you're a part of the military, and if they're going to do it for the military, how long before they do it for everybody else? I've already covered the fact that the Postal Service, that's right, the post office is screening social media posts, looking for bad actors. This is the attempt to shut up dissent. And I always find it interesting. You know, if your argument is so good, why do you have to shut up those who disagree with you? And again, with the Biden administration, he signed into law a quote-unquote hate crime bill. The theory being that, you know, during the pandemic, since it apparently came out of Wuhan, China, even though, well, the government said that it didn't come out of Wuhan, China before they said it did come out of Wuhan, China. I'm sorry, I'm trying to think rationally, and I can't do that when I'm dealing with the government. They're saying, oh, Asian Americans are being attacked. Except where? Forget the fact that the only attack they can point to showed it had absolutely nothing to do with the race of the people being attacked. It had to do with their employment, the fact that they worked at a massage parlor. We don't care. See, now we use that as an excuse to create to make it a hate crime, quote, scare quotes, hate crime. So now, if you're of Asian descent, anything done against you that is illegal is worse simply because of the color of your skin. That's what a hate crime, all hate crime is, says if I commit a crime against one person, it's one thing. If I commit a crime against another person, it's now a hate crime. That is worse. This is a racist bill created by racist legislators, signed by a racist president, to continue to instill racism in America and bully the American people into not thinking of the other person based on their content of their character, but based on the color of their skin. If someone was attacked, assaulted, or even worse, murdered, punish the perpetrator for it. But no, hatred and racism makes it worse. Why? Is the person any less beat up if it wasn't because of racism? And of course, it's never, you know, once we have these hate crimes, it's never about whether or not the attacker was actually racist, whether or not someone assumes it was done because of racism. Oh, the victim was this race, so now we're going to have racism. Most violent crimes involve hate of one form or another. But no, we're going to use the government to bully people into acting a certain way because of the color of someone's skin. More examples. Now let's get more, I want to move more towards the states. The Washington governor signed a law banning Native American-themed names on mascots at public schools in the state. Now, okay, there's a couple things I want to think about. First of all, schools do tend to be state issues, which actually I think they should be local issues, not state issues, but that's a question for another day. But since we are dealing with public schools, the public representatives do have a say in how they're run. They're government-owned schools. These are government schools. Forget public schools. These are government schools. So government does have a say. But really, is the biggest problem the mascot? Is the biggest problem that your school's team is named the Chiefs, the Braves, the Indians? Really? And if that's such a problem, why aren't the parents and the local school board doing something about it? It's because it's not a problem. Because most of the polls and research I've seen said Native Americans aren't offended by these names. They say, hey, proud, you're talking about us as being strong and brave and powerful. That's a compliment. No, what we have is some weenies at the state capitol in Washington saying, we don't like these. I wonder, was this bill about changing the names of schools, was it submitted by a Native American? Or was it submitted by a white liberal? I know. Racist. Yeah, these people are racist. If local sports teams want to have certain names, let them. But let's stop imposing our will on others because we don't like their choice. Let's face it. It was the school board and the local parents who chose those names. Maybe it was the students who chose those names. Let's stop imposing our will on others because we don't like their choice. Maybe the people, maybe it's actually the students in those teams that are Native Americans and chose those names for a reason. No, we have to bully people into agreeing with us rather than explaining why our position is better. Another example, let's take a look at California. Now, California is hoplophobic. The leaders in California have an irrational fear of firearms. They have some of the most restrictive firearms laws in the country. And now what they want to do is they have a bill, AB 1237, that would basically make it easier for the California Department of Justice to share not only gun ownership data, but the actual identities of gun owners. With who? Universities and researchers that have all proven to be anti-gun. It would require that information about the individuals who own firearms be available to the California Firearm Research Center at UC Davis and at the department's discretion, any other nonprofit or research institution or public agency. Again, not simply the number of guns, the type of guns. No. The identifying information of the gun owner. Ladies and gentlemen in California, do you want your name given to a research group that has shown themselves to be anti-gun? And pray, and I do mean pray, that they don't have a quote-unquote accidental data breach so that your information is released to these rabid anti-gun groups, that you're not doxxed. Do you really trust the government with that? If you believe it is okay to share not just the data about gun owners, or the data about gun ownership, but the data about the gun owners, your personal data, to be searched and sorted and sifted by the government or government-approved agencies. Isn't that an unreasonable search? Again, we're not talking about generic data. We're talking about personally identifiable information. Why? Well, let's bully people into not exercising their right to keep and bear arms. By the way, that's not a Second Amendment right. You do not get that right from the Second Amendment. That right doesn't exist because the Second Amendment was written. You have a natural human right to keep and bear arms. The Second Amendment is there to protect that. Speaking of guns, there have been many examples of banks and credit card processors targeting the gun industry. This was actually started under Obama, where his administration encouraged banks to not do business with certain unfriendly businesses. Businesses like, you know, gun shops, people that sell guns and ammo. Well, now Wyoming has passed a law to protect the firearm industry from anti-gun banks. Now, this is not the first time this has been happened. We've probably heard a lot about the legislation, the protection of the lawful commerce in arms, the federal law that does not allow someone to sue a gun manufacturer for the illegal use of their product unless they can be sued if the product has an actual defect. If the company itself did something wrong, they can be sued. Which is why it's not a First Amendment issue. People are not being deprived of their right to petition the government for redress of grievance. They're only being denied the right to abuse the petition, to say that the illegal use of a product is the fault of the manufacturer. Now, we don't do it with cars. We don't do it with knives. We don't do it with barbecue grills. Well, we do it with coffee. All right, remember McDonald's and the coffee fiasco? So Wyoming has said, no, if you're a bank and you're going to, gun industry. Now, some of you may be going, yay, this is great. But again, we're back to another problem. See, it's one thing for like Operation Checkpoint and others to influence businesses on who they'll do business with. It's quite another to say, we're going to force you to do business with these companies. See, Operation Choke Point was a problem because you had the federal government punishing, or threatening to punish businesses if they did business with certain companies. But it's quite different to say, let's say you have a bank. Let's say the bank of you. And let's flip it on its head. Let's say you do not want to do business with, pick your boogeyman of the, gun industry, alcohol, abortion, take your pick. Do you really think the government should be able to come and tell you, no, you must do business with that industry? Then why should the state of Wyoming have the authority to tell banks they have to do business with the gun industry? Again, if a bank is owned by someone who is rabidly anti-gun, that's just as much an infringement on their right as the government saying you can't do business with them. Now again, I'm a gun guy, and I hate to see these gun businesses suddenly having financial difficulties because the banks they've done business with for years have decided they don't want to do business with them anymore. But that is their right. A private business has the right to decide who they'll do business with. And if we're going to uphold the Constitution, if we're going to uphold rights, we must uphold rights, even the right of people we disagree with. So once again, we have government bullying a business. It's just this time it's pro-gun rather than anti-gun. Now, one area that is on firmer constitutional footing is a story I found in the Epoch Times about 15 state treasurers that warn that they're going to pull assets from banks that obstruct fossil fuel industry. A letter which was led by West Virginia Treasurer Riley Moore basically said, listen, if your financial institution and you give in to the federal pressure to refuse to lend or invest in any fossil fuel, coal, oil, natural gas, we won't invest with you. Now, this to me is perfectly legitimate. You're basically saying we are the treasurers of state funds. We have a responsibility to manage that money well, to do good with that money. If you, for whatever reason, whether they're giving into federal pressure or that's just the will of their owners, if you refuse to invest in the fossil fuel industry, we refuse to invest with you. See, that's the proper way to influence. Not to say you must, or by law, we require you to do business with the fossil fuel industry, kind of like Wyoming is doing with the gun industry. No, the right way to say, listen, if you are not going to do this, we will not invest with you. Now, call it a boycott, call it whatever you want. The idea is simple. We're not going to invest our money in things we disagree with. I got a few more I want to zip through here pretty quickly. There's a new federal lawsuit. And this one's, again, interesting. It's challenging employer-mandated COVID-19 vaccines. And Anthony Zaccoli, a former employee of the Doña Ana County Detention Center, New Mexico, claimed he was fired from his job because he refused to receive the experimental injection, according to an amended complaint filed on May 4th. So basically, he's an employee of the county detention center. This is interesting because if we're talking county, we're talking government. Now, he's saying he was fired. I'm curious if he has proof because he wouldn't take the COVID vaccine. Why? As he referred to it, the experimental injection. There is tremendous pressure being placed on people for to take this experimental drug. And he's now suing to get them to stop. Now, it goes into whole, you know, OSHA regulations and all of that. Now, the county basically says that he was not fired because he wouldn't take the vaccine. He's a probationary employee. He could be fired for with or without cause until his probation period was up. So that's an interesting twist. But this is now the second, apparently, detention center employee who claims to have been fired for not taking an experimental drug. Again, if this is true, if either or both of these defendants were fired because they would not submit to experimentation on themselves, it's just another example of, we'll rule by intimidation. Do what we want. Take this drug. Or lose your job. This intimidation shows up in other ways. A lady by the name of Amy Cooper, apparently she's known, but not to me. She apparently filed a false complaint against a bird watcher in Central Park last year. And her employer, Franklin Templeton, fired her. She was in the park, she saw a black bird watcher, she filed a false complaint, and now she's being fired for it. Now she's claiming a discrimination. Apparently, Franklin Templeton fired her because of her racist actions. But she's claiming, well, there's no example of racism. I wonder, you know, it was a black bird watcher in Central Park. Now we have bullies on top of bullies. Is it Amy Cooper? Did she file the complaint because the bird watcher was black? There's been evidence of people who have reacted badly to people of color after certain events. Who knows? Did Franklin Templeton fire her because they just didn't want to deal with a racism complaint of one of their employees? I don't know who the bully is here. But it shows the toxic environment that happens when this bullying is allowed. The idea that someone would file a complaint simply against someone simply because they're black is just, it's racist. And the idea that a company would fire someone, I would say before the case has been proven. That might be the only thing I would have against Franklin Templeton. She hasn't been, I don't think her case has gone to court. So maybe that, but then again, it's their job. They should be able to do what they want within certain legal boundaries. We see intimidation with public schools. There's a public school in Los Alamitos that is giving third graders lessons about gender spectrum. They're teaching them about transgender in third grade. Indoctrination, intimidation, comply or else. We have the whole mask mandate. Again, intimidation, do what we say or else. We have more and more examples of people finally standing up and saying enough is enough. The Georgia mom whose school board video, the video of her talking to the school board, went viral. She says, quote, "Every month I come here and I hear the same thing, social and emotional health. If you truly mean that, you would end the mask requirement tonight. She goes on to discuss, you know, we have vaccines. Adults have been vaccinated. Why are we doing this when the CDC says children not only don't generally get the vaccine, they don't get the disease, they don't spread it either. But again, we still have mask mandates because we want to bully people. We want to intimidate them into compliance. You don't have to be a genius to understand this. A fourth grader, a 10-year-old boy in Florida, stood up in front of a school board and said it's unfair that he was being forced to wear a mask in school. See, the thing about bullies is they do their best work when no one challenges them. So it's about time the American people stop cowering before bullies, that we return to being the land of the free and the home of the brave. Because unless we do, we are no longer citizens. We are subjects. And we will be ruled by whatever master can best intimidate us. Now, you can find out more about my show, get all the latest podcasts. Everything you need is at AmericaOutLoud.com. Just look for our shows under the menu, and please join me here next time on the Constitution Study.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day.